Let's turn to Genesis 16. I promise not to keep you too long tonight. Number one, because I'm tired. And number two, because I don't think it's going to take that long to talk about this subject. But preachers have lied before, and preachers often lie about how much time they're going to take. And I'm probably the chief of all of that. So look at Genesis 16, and I want to talk to you about women at the well. I know you're normally familiar with the woman at the well, but there may be more occurrences than what I'm going to share with you here tonight, but we're going to share four occurrences of women at the well. And it's not the same well, of course, but let's look at Genesis 16, and we're going to consider this first woman and draw some lessons from this. And this is Hagar, the Egyptian slave that was a concubine or a co-wife with Sarai at this time, to Abraham. And just to give you the very brief context in Genesis 16, we're going to look at verse 6. The context here is Sarah, or Sarai, as she's known at this time, stops trusting in the provision and the promise of God. God has promised that Sarah and Abraham are going to have a son, their own son. Out of her body, she's going to bear a child. And she's barren. She's been barren her whole life. And so at this point, which is probably about 10 or so years into the journey after Abram goes out when he was about 75 years old, it's about 10 or so years into the wilderness journey as they've moved into the area of the promised land before it has been procured as the promised land by God. And Sarah, she just basically stops believing in the promises of God. Now, don't be too hard on her, because those promises have been conveyed to her indirectly. You know, Abraham has gotten the message from God, and he goes and tells Sarah. Of course, I know none of you, dear, sweet ladies, wives, have ever doubted what your husband told you. I know that you've never done that. But here comes Abram back, and he says, "Honey, God has promised that we're going to have a son." "Are you sure?" "Yes, I'm sure." "Did he say with me?" "Well, not really, but he promised us." You know, you can see where this would go. So don't be too hard on Sarah. But she makes a huge mistake of not trusting in the promises of God. A mistake, by the way, that is still affecting the world today. Okay? So that being said, she gives Hagar as a co-wife or a concubine to Abram, and they conceive, and she is expecting a child that will become known as Ishmael, by the way, which is the father of the Middle Eastern folks today, and most of the Muslims, by the way, because they trace their route back to Abraham through Ishmael. It's worthy of note that Abraham is the root of three world religions, and that is the Jews, the Judaism, Christian religion, which traces back through the Jews to Abraham, and the Muslim religion. So this man Abraham is a very important character even in the world today. Three world religions that are still around today trace their root back to Abraham. And so what happens is Hagar conceives a child with Abraham, and then she begins to think that she's the most important one around, but she forgot that Sarah is the chief wife. She's the true love of Abraham. And so Abraham turns her back over to Sarah as she's beginning to act like she's better than Sarah or in some way or another. And Sarah is very harsh with her. Remember, she's a slave also. And so what we have here, as Sarah is being harsh on Hagar, Hagar runs away. She flees. It says in verse 6, "But Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand," that's Hagar, "to do to her as it pleaseth her. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face." And so here we have the first encounter of a woman at a well. "And the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur." If we'll read carefully here, we're going to find just who this angel of the Lord is. Sometimes in the Old Testament, when you have a reference to the angel of the Lord, it is a reference to the Lord Jesus Christ as a pre-incarnate vision or presence of Jesus before he came in the flesh. That's what this is, and I'll show you why. And then sometimes it's an angel like Gabriel or some other angel, that's Michael the archangel or something like that. But this is, without a doubt, this is God. And this is the pre-incarnate Christ. The angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. So here she is in the wilderness, in the desert, at a well. No doubt she has stopped here at this well to receive sustenance, to get water. She's on the run. She's run away. She's leaving. She's gone. She's carrying a baby. Okay? She's running away. And the angel of the Lord said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, whence camest thou? As if the Lord doesn't know the answer to this, right? Whence camest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, return to thy mistress, which is the last thing that she wanted to do, and submit thyself unto her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, and this is how we know this is God. This is Jehovah in the presence of pre-incarnate Christ. Notice what God says. Only God can say this. I will multiply thy seed exceedingly. No angel can do that. You understand? God says, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child. That's some kind of prenatal care, isn't it? The Lord could see right into her womb, and the Lord, in this very early, no doubt, early first trimester time frame, could see that there was a baby growing there. Behold, thou art with child, and thou shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. The Lord says these things shall happen. You shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael. She didn't have to worry about what to call this boy. Interesting, this is Ishmael. You know, eventually there's an Israel, okay? Because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. Now watch this. This may not be as good a news as the first part. And he will be a wild man. How'd you like to, if the Lord came and told you about a child you were fixing to bear, ladies, and the Lord looked at you and said, let me tell you something. You're going to call this little boy, whatever, and he's going to be a wild man. That'd be a little disheartening, wouldn't it? You have to go ahead and cut you a switch at that point and have it ready to go. This boy, when he grows up, he's going to be a wild man. What does that mean? His hand will be against every man. You think about that world religion that is out there today. I'm not saying every single person in it, but the way the leaders of that function, especially the very militant type leaders who, you know, see everything else as infidel, he will be a wild man. His hand will be against every man and every man's hand against him, and he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. So she has told him that he's going to grow up and he's going to be a man and he's going to be a fierce fighting man, and he's going to fight against men, and men are going to fight against him. And notice it doesn't say he shall die. You know, it doesn't say he's going to die. But it says this is the type of existence he would have. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. So he's going to be very tight-knit with the brethren that he has. Is that not the case today? Can y'all see that? I mean, even today, that's the case of the descendants of Ishmael. Now watch what she does. She called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me. For she said, have I also here looked after him that seeth me? She has seen God. She has seen pre-incarnate Christ. I'm not telling you that she could tell every feature about him, or I'm not saying that. She obviously didn't have the name Jesus Christ given to her, but she has seen God, and she knows that God has seen her. And she says that she called the place there Be'er Lehek Roy, or Bir Lakai Roy. Roy means God. It's the well of the living one seeing me. And it also comes from the word in the Old Testament where you see somebody says they're a seer, a prophet, or a seer, S-E-E-R. It literally means to see something, a seer, one who sees. She's saying, I have been seen by the one who sees, by my seer. Okay, we don't use that word anymore, so it sounds a little weird, but that's what it means. The well of the living one who sees me. Now, what's some conclusions that you can draw and from this? And by the way, it says, Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And there's some more that you can read about Ishmael and what Abram does with him as he grows older. And even in his teens, he's a pretty wild man, pretty wild guy. So much to the extent that Abram has to send him away at some point after his son has born Isaac through Sarah. So what are some conclusions here? Here's something that we need to take to heart. No matter how terrible your situation is, the Lord sees you. She's in a terrible situation. You might say in one sense she's an abused woman, an abused wife. I mean, even though it's the co-wife, you know, that's abusing her. If it's abuse, I mean, she was a slave. We're not told exactly what Sarah did, but she certainly put her to the numbers. She certainly made her do what she said, at least. But if it was some form of abuse and it was so bad, or maybe just the environment was so volatile that she was in and she runs away, it's a bad situation. And she had no idea that God was watching her. No matter how terrible your situation is, the Lord sees you. And it's notable that a nation is still around today that was born out of this sorrow. A group of people are still in existence today that draw their lineage from Abraham. Look at Genesis 24 and 10. Genesis 24 and verse 10. And this is another woman at a well. And here we find a woman named Rebekah. Genesis 24 and 10. This is the account of Abraham, when he is old, sending his servant to get a wife for his son Isaac. Okay, Isaac, the promised seed. You know, not Ishmael, but Isaac, the promised seed. And Abraham is old. Sarah has died. And Abraham instructs his servant to go to the land that he came from, where there were relatives there, cousins there. This was, guys, this is not some modern day kissing cousins kind of thing. Okay, in these days, when the gene pool was not so spliced out and there were not so many anomalies in the gene pool, it was common for this to happen. It was a normal thing. It was culturally normal, and it was also, you know, physically and medically, it was not something that was frowned upon at this time. Okay, it is later in the days of Moses because of how corrupt, you know, the gene pool becomes after years and years of corruption on it. And obviously it's not around today. But in these days, it was normal, okay? It was the thing you wanted to do if you were in the situation like Abraham. You did not want your son to marry in, or your child to marry into the culture around you, because it would take that child away from the worship of the true and living God. That's a lesson that we can still take it to heart today. A lesson that we must take to heart today, because the culture is so ruined today. By the way, I think this is also a great lesson for those of you who seek to be married one day. You know how old Isaac was? He was 40 years old. And he goes on and has this great marriage. I mean, they had, you know, some rocky times in their marriage when the boys came along, you know, with Jacob and Esau. But he's 40 years old. You know, you would think, well, he's over the hill. He's past marrying age. You know, it's over for him. He's 40 when he marries. And so Abraham sends his servant to go find a wife for Isaac. And as he goes, if you look at verse 10, the servant took 10 camels of the camels of his master Abraham and departed. For all the goods of his master were in his hand, and he arose and went to Mesopotamia under the city of Nahor. And he made his camels to kneel down without the city by a well of water. Here's another well. At the time of the evening, even the time that women go out to draw water. So get the picture in your mind. This is not interstate highway travel in SUVs, okay? This is pack animals with supplies for months of travel. And no doubt he probably had servants with him for protection and so forth. But he goes and he travels a long ways. I mean, days, weeks to get to this place. And when he gets there, he's on the outside of the city. This is the city of Nahor, where he is told that this family resides. I mean, you talk about a needle in a haystack. You know, you ever been somewhere and you ran into somebody and it was just like, wow, you know, we've been in some strange places traveling before when I was a child. And it seemed like we were on the East Coast, or we were in the mountains, or we were somewhere. You know, we'd run into somebody that we knew. Like, oh, my goodness, you know, what a coincidence. Well, this is a needle in the haystack kind of thing. And the servant is so concerned about what he's doing for Abraham that he's already gotten Abraham's release in case he couldn't find someone. He was so concerned about it. And so here he comes and he causes the camels, the thirsty camels, to kneel down on the outside of the city. Remember, there were 10 camels. And he begins to pray. And he says, "O Lord God of my master Abraham," he's at the well, "I pray thee, send me good speed this day and show kindness unto my master Abraham. Behold, I stand here by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city come out to draw water. And let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, 'Let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink,' and she shall say, 'Drink,' and I will give thy camels drink also. Let the same be she that thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac, and thereby shall I know that thou hast showed kindness unto my master." That's a pretty big ask, is it not? That's a pretty big ask. He said, "Let it be the girl who comes out here and offers me water, and not just offers me water, but also offers my camels water." And how many camels did he have? 10. Remember? A long time ago, I looked up how much water one camel would drink. It's a lot. It's a lot. These camels are thirsty. They've been traveling across the desert. You know, their humps are dry. They're tired. They're expended. It would take a lot of work to water 10 camels. I think that's important because it shows you what kind of young lady this woman that's about to come out here to the well is. She knew how to work. "Came to pass that the damsel to whom I say, 'Let down the pitcher,' and also offers drink to my camels, let it be her." That's a big ask. But you know what? Jesus said, "You have not because you ask not." Or James said that. And then Jesus said, "Ask and it shall be given unto you. Seek and you shall find." So maybe we don't have it because we haven't asked, right? "And it came to pass before he had done speaking." Did y'all get that? In his mind, or maybe he's whispering, he's on his knees, or he's praying, "Oh Lord, let this be the woman, you know, that comes in." And before he finishes speaking, here comes Rebecca to the well. That's a pretty good answer very quickly, isn't it? Don't you wish all prayers could be answered like that? I know they're not, but some can be. "And it came to pass before he had done speaking that, behold, Rebecca came out, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother." This is exactly the family that he's told the servant to look for. Now, don't forget this. Okay, this servant of Abraham did not go to the local pub or bar. Y'all get that? He's not looking for who he needs to find for his master in the bar, or at the party, or at the keg party, or at the rave party, or at the dance party. He is positioning himself in a place where he knows that young women will be coming. And it's not a bad place. It's where they went to get water in the well. It's the time of day when women come out to go to get water at the well. I don't think anybody here, except maybe Brother Jim, has been to Africa. Brother Asher's been to Africa. And we've seen, you know, the women coming away carrying water and carrying bundles of wood on their head, you know, walking around. I mean, it's just something that you see very common in a place like Africa. We just don't see that here anymore. You know, we got wheelbarrows here. You know, we've got, Sister Tracy's got 55 little things with straps on that you can carry around, you know, that you can put stuff in and carry it. We just don't put things on our head. But these women are coming with pitchers of water on their head, and they fill them up and put them back on their head, and they often have turbans on their head to kind of let them rest there. And as they walk, you know, they carry them up there. It's really amazing to see that. I tried it a couple times, and it hurt my neck because I'm not used to it. So this man is not at the bar, not at the party. He is positioning himself in a place where he can see the best of what he needs. See? And here they come. And the first one to come, as he prays, is the one that he's after, which is Rebecca. And she comes before he had done speaking. So he looks up from his prayer, and here comes this woman. And it says the damsel was very fair. She was a virgin. Neither had any man known her. She went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her. This guy has some, as we say, some gumption. You know, he has some sense. You know, he doesn't just kick back and go, "Well, I'm going to let this come to me." He's going to go find out, could this be the answer to the prayer that I just prayed? And the servant ran to meet her and said, "Let me, I pray thee, drink a little water of thy pitcher." And she said, "Drink, my lord." Very respectful. And she hasted and let down her pitcher upon her hand and gave him drink. And when she had done giving him drink, she said, "I will draw water for thy camels also." Whoa, 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 wait a minute. Sounds very familiar to his prayer, doesn't it? She says, "Until they have done drinking." You notice that? This is going to take her some time. It's a 45-minute to an hour job, maybe more, filling up the trough that's right there where the camels are drinking, or letting the camels drink straight out of a pitcher. There was probably a trough there. And she hasted and emptied her pitcher into the trough and ran again into the well to draw water and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, held his peace, to wit whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. And it came to pass, as the camels had done drinking, probably an hour, hour and a half later, that the man took a golden earring and a half a shekel weight, two bracelets off of her, and two bracelets for her hands of 10 shekels weight of gold, and said, "Whose daughter art thou? Tell me, I pray thee, is there room in thy father's house for us to lodge in?" And she says, "I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, which she bare unto Nahor," the exact family that Abraham had said, "Go back and find." She said, "Moreover, we have both straw and provender enough and room at the lodging." The man bowed down his head and worshiped the Lord. Worshiped the Lord right there in her presence. He bowed down his head. He said, "Oh, thank you, God. You are a great, sovereign, providing God." And he said, "Blessed be the Lord God of my master Abraham, who hath not left destitute my master of his mercy and his truth. I being in the way, the Lord led me to the house of my master's brethren." All this happened with a woman coming down to a well. You see that? This young woman was not looking for a husband. She was unmarried, and she was just going about her business. So one of the things that this teaches me is it doesn't matter how trivial the occurrence may seem to you or to me. God is the God of small things. And in just the most trivial of times, of moments, of occurrences, the Lord can show up and he can show out. So don't dismiss the trivial. Don't dismiss the ordinary. One of the commentators that I've enjoyed reading talked about how the Lord makes extraordinary just the ordinary. The ordinary things that we just take for granted. The go about your day, the handle like you normally handle it. And the next thing you know, the Son of God pops up, So she wasn't looking for a husband. But guess what? Here we have another nation that is born from this unexpected encounter. She goes back and she marries Isaac. And they have two boys, twin boys, Jacob and Esau. Jacob is eventually renamed Israel. And there's still a world religion today. Two world religions today that stem from that. Judaism and Christianity. Genesis 29. Third woman at the well. This one's a little more on the humorous side. This is Jacob, not yet named Israel. Jacob went on his journey, came into the land of the people of the east. His mother has sent him out to go and find the relatives again. This is very similar to the servant of Abraham going out to find a wife for Isaac, but a little bit different because, number one, Jacob's brother Esau wants to kill him. He wants to murder him. And you can read about why Jacob, he's the usurper, the supplanter. He stole the birthright. He deceived his father for the blessing, and he stole the birthright from his brother because his brother didn't have enough sense to come in from the woods from hunting so long till he was about to die. You can go read about that. The bottom line is Jacob has to flee from home because Esau wants to murder him. And so he is sent away by his mother. And he goes on his journey, and he comes to the area there where the land of the people are, of the relatives. And he looks, and he beholds a well in the field, verse 2. "And lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, for out of that well they watered the flocks. And a great stone was upon the well's mouth, and thither were all the flocks gathered. And they rolled the stone from the well's mouth," if you can picture that, probably a flat stone that laid over this well, that they would roll away and water the sheep. "And Jacob says unto the men," verse 4, "My brethren, whence be ye?" And they said, "Of Haran are we." That's very close to Iran, Haran, back in those days. "And he said unto them, Know ye Laban the son of Nahor?" This is the same guy, that was mentioned by the servant, years before. "And they said, We know him. And they said unto him, Is he well? And they said, He is well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep." So another hardworking young woman who knows how to work. It was a little unusual to have a female watching the sheep. And I don't know all the details behind that, but you understand it was just a little unusual. Usually it was a male who was the shepherd who was watching over the sheep. So here comes Rachel. Maybe she's just bringing the sheep to water. "And Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep," verse 7. "And he said, Lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that the cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go and feed them." So Jacob says, "Hey, let's help this girl out and let's water the sheep right now. They said, we cannot. These are real thuggish men, by the way. They're not gentlemen. Any gentleman worth his salt, you know, would help out the young lady. And they said, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. And while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth. I mean, that's like a superhuman act. I believe in some ways the Lord infused him with strength to be able to do this, because they usually had several men doing this. So he rolls the stone from the well's mouth, and this, you know, it's just kind of humorous if you think about it. You know, he's carrying on this great act of strength in front of her to impress her. And the flock of, and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. And now, that's pretty cool. You know, he's given this great act of strength to impress her. Well, then it's all downhill from there. Because after he, you know, rolls the stone away, so she can, and waters the flock, you know, and she's thinking, this guy's, wait, this is kind of neat. You know, this is a real gentlemanly thing to do. He takes her and he kisses her. Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. This guy, he sounds neurotic, doesn't he? I mean, he just sounds like he's out of his gourd. I mean, can you imagine, young ladies, if you met a guy for the first time and he carried out some superhuman act of strength? Wow, that's impressive. And he walks up to you and he grabs you and he kisses you on the lips or on the cheek. And then he starts going, ah. I mean, you're going to go, Mama, Daddy, help. You know, this guy's nuts. And by the way, he's nuts with sin. He is. He has deceived his father. His brother's trying to kill him. He's on the run by himself. He doesn't know a whole lot about the outdoors. I think he does some, but he's not like his brother Esau, a man of the outdoors, who almost died in the outdoors, by the way. So, you know, and here he meets this relative and this, you know, this beautiful young woman, you know, and he's just kind of crazy. So, what do we get out of this? Well, a nation was born from this unexpected encounter. Rachel was not looking for a husband, but she found one. And of course, I've said many times that he shouldn't have kissed her on the first introduction, because he had to wait 7 years to kiss her again. You know, Laban made him wait 7 years to marry her. And then on top of that, he winds up marrying her sister. So that's a bad, bad deal there, you know, from first kiss on the first encounter to 7 years later, marry the sister that he didn't even love, and then eventually he marries Rachel. He worked for her for 14 years. A nation was born from that encounter. Very interesting what's going on at these wells, is it not? Let's move along to John, the fourth chapter. This will be the last one. The one you're most familiar with, the one we're going to say the least about. Well, we're going to draw some conclusions from the whole thing. This is the account of Jesus with the woman at the well. Verse 3, he left Judea, departed again into Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. That's high noon. And there cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, give me to drink. And I'll let you go and read all about the encounter where he speaks of the living water, which is himself. And he also speaks of true worship, which is found in himself. And he also confronts her with her very significant sin. Jesus said that she had had five husbands, and the man she was with at that point, she was just living with him. This is basically what we would call today an abused woman. I think we're safe to say that she would have been an abused domestic violence victim, because in the culture that this happened, having five husbands and then living with a guy, she's been kicked around. She's been kicked around and dismissed and mistreated. There's no question about that. And now maybe she did some things that she shouldn't have done too. Maybe she wasn't faithful in some situations. Maybe that's what happened too. But being a domestic violence prosecutor for 15 or more years, you know, this woman would have met that qualification just based on the number of times that she had been traded off to another man. So it's very interesting, the women that you see that come to the well. You have, in the beginning, you have a woman who was most likely in some way dealt with harshly by her co-wife. And here, this last woman that we have at the well appears to be somewhat of a domestic violence type victim. And then in the between, you got the two young ladies who, you know, probably had silver spoons in their mouths, you know. So from one end of the spectrum to the other, don't miss that. From one end of the spectrum to the other, from the very worst situation you can imagine to just an ordinary situation where there's no abuse and there's no violence and somebody's not even looking for anything or doesn't even think they need anything, and the Lord shows up. It's interesting that each one of those situations, every one of them dealt with a husband. Y'all notice that? Maybe this is a good message for the young ladies or the young men. You can flip it around. So where were they? Where were these women where they went and they either found a husband or they were told what to do with a husband, like Hagar, the first one? They were at a place of nourishment. Y'all hear that? They went to the well. That was the place where you got sustaining. I mean, you had to have water in those days. The main three things that they drank in those days were wine and water and milk. They didn't have Mountain Dew. They didn't have energy drinks. They didn't have some other way to be, and they didn't have running water. For most of the time, they didn't have running water. So you had to go draw the water at the well, and if you didn't, you starved. You died. So where is that today? You know, there is a well. There's about 8 or 10 wells on our farm, but there's one particular well behind my grandmother's house where Uncle Mackie and Aunt Lorene live. And it's still a usable well. We don't use it, but it's a capped off well, and it's still got the old crank there with a rope on it, you know. And it's a deep well. And you could literally, you know, use that. We just don't do that anymore, right? So from a spiritual standpoint, where's the place of nourishment today? Where is the well that you go to drink from spiritually so that you can receive spiritual nourishment? It's right here. It's the church of God. It's the church of God is a well. It's a place where you go to get living water. And I don't care how many denominations men come up with, okay? There's a certain taste of spiritual water that you're seeking, and that is Christ alone is your salvation. Christ alone is the presence you seek. Christ alone is the one that sustains you. That's what you're trying to seek. If the water doesn't taste that way, you need to move on to the next well, see? So they went to a place of nourishment. And where is that today? It's the church of God, where the living water is today. The servant didn't go to the bar. He didn't go to the party. He went to the well. And there is no soul like Hagar that is so lost, you know, and running that the Lord cannot find them. He sees them. That's why she named the well what she did. And there's no occasion, young ladies, young men, older ladies, older men, whoever you are, children, there's no occasion that is so trifling that the Lord can't intervene, show up, and show out. Every one of those young women, two found a husband. You know, Rachel found Jacob, Rebecca found Isaac, Hagar returned to her husband. But perhaps the last one is the most telling. She found her ultimate husband, did she not? She found the Lord Jesus Christ. And she was made a citizen of the nation of God with full privileges, not just as a citizen of the nation of God, but also as part of the bride of Christ. You get that? She met her true husband at that well that day, just going out, by the way, in the middle of the day. That's not when women went to get water. It was the end of the day when women went to get water. Why was this woman at the well at the middle of the day? It's because she was rejected by everybody. You see that? So there's no situation so trifling that the Lord can't show up. Once again, the preacher has lied. The preacher was going to stop early. It's 7 o'clock. The preacher's stopping now. Forgive the preacher for lying, please.